Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia 7-year warranty. Wherever the next 7 years bring you, Kia has you covered.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And Joe at RT.ie. Anne Mooney, Anne, good afternoon.
How are you?
Oh, good. You had contacted us earlier about
about
your father, but you've just got bad news, you tell us, in the last few minutes, is it?
Yes, he's just passed away, Joe. Lord of mercy on him.
Lord of mercy on him, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was this virus.
We don't know. My dad is 15 days waiting for his results. Today is day 15. And there's seven or eight other residents in the nursing home, and they're all waiting on results. Their staff are waiting on results. The owner of the nursing home, who I have permission to tell all this, I spoke to her. She got in touch with the HSD. She said she's banging her head off the wall. She emailed Simon Harris. She got in touch with Primetime, and there's nobody giving her any answers. She was told by the HSD that they were part of the community and that the results are all gone in with the community. So that's wrong. These are our most vulnerable people, and our staff in there as well are out sick waiting on results. It's just not right.
And because he was suspected COVID-19, that obviously meant different procedures when you went to visit. Is that correct?
Of course. Yeah. He got sick 3 weeks ago tomorrow. He got a chest infection. My dad does suffer with COPD.
Okay.
He would have been 90 next month. But he suffered with COPD. So he got a chest infection, like the norm, as it thought. But because of the virus, have to follow proper procedure, and they had got the doctor out. He was put on fluids and antibiotics, and immediately he was isolated as per procedure. So the first week he didn't respond to the antibiotics. He was coming on well, and he had got a temperature on the Friday, but then he had no temperature after that for, I think, nearly a week. So they really thought it was just a chest infection, but then it started back again, and he was put on another antibiotic. And but he's kind of been going down then too.
Yeah.
So, but I have done the test 15 days ago, as I said, and just didn't know the results. We got a call about 5 days ago to say that his blood pressure was very, very low, and if we want CPR to be performed, if that was to happen, and if we want him to be sent to his hospital, or to leave him in the nursing home where he was comfortable and he knew everybody. And as a family, we all agreed that he would be comfortable where he was, because we knew we wouldn't be able to see him one way or another, as we thought. And he wouldn't know anybody in the hospital, where he knew everybody in the nursing home and they knew him. And they're all mad about him, and he was mad about them too, you know.
Okay.
So we were allowed to go in and see him one at a time, fully gowned up with proper PPE. And we spent 10 minutes each with him, and he's coherent. He was singing on the phone with me last night, Joe.
Singing.
I had a video call with him last night, singing Sweet 16, Sweet 16, himself and his carer, who he was mad about, and I know she was mad about him. I don't know if she's listening, because she was on nights last night. But he was singing Sweet 16. He thanked me for getting Holy Communion for him yesterday, or the day before, I think it was, because he wanted to make his confession.
Okay.
And I said, "Daddy, you don't need to make a confession." I said, "You can talk to Holy God," I said, "in your prayers, and tell him whatever you want to tell him."
Yeah.
But he said, "Anne," he said, "I haven't had communion in a long time." He said, "I need to make a confession." I said, "Okay." I talked to Father Paul, who's my parish priest here in Newbridge. I came home and I spoke to Father Paul, and I told him the story. And I said, "I don't know if I did right or wrong, telling him that he didn't need to make a confession." Mm. He said, "No, Anne, you did right." He said, "It's exceptional times." He said, "You did right." He said, "So I did ask if I could get communion, because there is a Eucharistic minister, one of the nurses that works in the home. And I had asked her if she could give him communion, but she said she couldn't get it. So fair play, Father Paul gave me communion, and I drove her over with it, told her the story, and she was able to tell my dad everything that the priest said, that he didn't need to make a confession, and that he'd keep him in his prayers. He thanked me for that last night even. That'll tell you how alert he was even still last night.
Last night, and he died in the last...
Half hour or so.
And he was
I
called
with him for about a half an hour, God love him.
Okay, and his name is Jerry Ryan.
Yeah, Jerry and I, Jerry for short, as we always said, the real Jerry Ryan, real even Jerry. Though I have the other Jerry Ryan too.
Yeah, and Jerry's anniversary in a couple of weeks, 10 years there.
Yeah, yeah, my dad's a Cabra man.
Yeah.
Very proud of him.
And how do you proceed now? Well, it's too early even to ask you that, but had you been...
I really don't know. I know my sister has been speaking to the undertakers that looked after my mum's funeral 4 years ago, Lord of Mercy Center, and she just said to the undertakers that she'd like the same coffin that Amy has, because no, we can't go into these places. I don't know if there will be a service. I'm going to ring Father Paul now after I get off the phone with you, and I'll ask him, can we have a service?
Tell us a little bit about Jerry Ryan. He was born in Dublin, obviously.
He was born in Finglas. Yeah. And when he was three, they moved out to Cabra.
Yeah.
His dad was a Garda.
Okay.
And he had, I think there was eight of them. His brother Peter still lives up in Cabra with his wife Adelaide. I've just been on the phone trying to break the news to them. But he had a sister, Helen, that was in the nursing home in Dublin. She's been gone a few months as well, Lord of Mercy on her. Oh. But Daddy was a soldier.
Oh,
he's a panel beater fitter in the army, in the transport yard, and a very good one at that. And as a child growing up in the Corrie camp, every single day there was somebody's car outside our house my father was working on.
Fair play.
And he was he really was brilliant. He worked for Queen's Garage here in Newbert up to the age of 70 years of age.
Wow.
And he had his first stroke. I think he was about 71.
And many siblings in your family, Anne? And many children?
I have three brothers and three sisters.
Okay, and what was your mother's name?
My mother's name was Mary Cody. She was from Craigna Manor, County Kilkenny. Very proud of it. And she sang on the Live at Tree when she was 65.
Yeah.
Do you remember there was a Live at Tree? There was the over 65.
Yes.
My mother sang Blueberry Hill and she did Satchmo. And her cousin actually won it that year, Breda Foley from Craigna Manor. She played the saxophone.
Wow.
So, dad was a keen footballer too.
Oh, I was going to say, what were his hobbies? Was Jerry Ryan into sport or?
Yeah, he was a great footballer. He played the All Army Ireland or something. I don't know. I'm probably even saying it wrong, but they won a medal one year for the All Army in soccer. And he'd tell you stories about playing the football. And he said one time there was an officer on the other team. My dad was a sergeant.
Right.
And daddy got tackled by this fella, and down to the ground he went. My dad did. And he said, the next thing all I knew was, he said, when I was getting up, your mum was down beside me. He said, he looked around and Mickey Phelan, now Mickey's gone, I was right, Lord of Mercy, and Mickey Phelan was there. He was after punching your mum for punching
so
his dad.
Luck.
But he said, the referee, he said, was great, did nothing about it. Like, went on and played the match, and there was no problems and no hassle, no drama in those days, you know. But he'd tell you like stories like that. He was a great man. He loved talking.
Yeah.
And everything was up to dubs. And he was teaching the girls in the nursing home how to speak Irish, fun to talk to, and they all, he was great. He was great. Ah, a lovely man.
God rest him, man. And yeah, Anne, why last night in the last conversation you had with him, why was Sweet 16 his party piece, or he just had an...
My auntie Kitty from Ballyfermot, Lord of Mercy, which would have been a great man and woman too, she sang Sweet 16. And the girl that used to do nights with him on night shift, she would sing with my dad. She was so, my father was absolutely crazy about her. She was so special to him. And she was mad about my dad. And she would sing it with him. And they do that. They sing songs that they'd know, you know.
Yeah.
But my father's song was Straight Banana. You probably never heard it because I think my grandfather in Craigna Manor wrote it, but I never saw Straight Banana. But that was his.
He sounds like a great, great man, Jerry.
He was a great man. He was a lovely man and a very soft man, and he loved all of us, all of his children. He loved us all. He's lovely. Lovely man.
Well, with your permission, we'll play Sweet 16 in his memory.
Oh, thank you so much.
And it's sung by the Furies, who were from Ballyfermot, right. Clatter Road and Ballyfermot.
I know, my auntie Kitty knew them. Sang it, knew them.
Yeah,
they went into the hospital to visit her one time when they had that cancer.
Oh, wow.
I know, you see, you don't know where you'd be talking.
No, it's a lovely piece.
Yes, thank you. So God, thank you.
God rest Jerry Ryan.
Thanks very much.
God rest.
Thank you very much.
Died in the last hour.
When first I saw the love light in your eyes, I thought the world held not but joy for me. And even though we've drifted far apart, I never dreamed but what I dream. When you were sweet, when you were sweet, 16.
And that's the Furies singing the song that Jerry Ryan, who died within the past hour, sang to his family down the phone last night because he was in a nursing home with suspected COVID-19. He was waiting on results and Jerry died, as his wonderful daughter Anne told us about his wonderful, wonderful life. He died within the last hour. 1850 715 815.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie 51551. Wash your hands. Colette, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Yesterday, at length on the programme, we'd been contacted by relatives of residents of nursing homes, and a number of them had been told that if, God forbid, they do become unwell with COVID-19, they will not be hospitalised. Right. Now, you have received a similar email.
Yes. First of all, Joe, I'd like to convey my deep, sincere condolences to Anne there on the death of her father. We lost our own father on the 5th of March.
Okay.
So we did. So it's a very difficult time for her.
Okay. Okay.
Yes, we did get an email regarding, our loved ones that are in the nursing home, mm-hmm. and that the HSE has advised us that none of our residents would receive a better form of treatment in a hospital than in the nursing home, as the only treatment available to the residents is to manage it with antiviral drugs or antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my mum has Alzheimer's. She's in Lucan Lodge Nursing Home.
Right.
And as a family, we wouldn't want her to be moved to hospital.
Okay.
But that's our, mm-hmm. our, because of her condition and that, you know, she's in a situation, God love her, that she doesn't even realise my dad is gone. And her sister died only 3 weeks ago as well.
Right.
But we're, you know, we're pleading with the minister to make sure, please, that any extra staff that you get, nurses, doctors, mm-hmm. carers in particular, that to make sure that you're deploying them equally between the hospitals and the nursing homes.
Okay.
Because if the extra staff are not in the nursing homes and our residents in our nursing home, you know, all our loved ones mm-hmm. in the nursing home get so sick and there's not enough staff, they will have to be transferred to hospitals. So that's creating another terrible situation.
And Colette, have your mother, when she was well, or indeed the family, have they signed a do not resuscitate?
We had that signed for my father, so we did, yes. We have done all that because my father had ill health for a good while. He was 5 years in the nursing home. My mom was 4 years. So as a family, no, we wouldn't want her to be resuscitated, you know.
Okay. So there's no... I hate being so blunt with you, Colette, just to get... So there's no circumstances that you would want your mother transferred from the nursing home to a hospital?
The only way we would want my mother transferred is if she was in dreadful pain, Joe, and they could not treat the pain in the nursing home. It happened to my father before he passed, the night that we got the call that he was very sick, and he was transferred over to Blanchetown. They knew him over there because he was in and out of COVID, and the treatment was excellent. And it gave him, for the treatment that they gave him, the intravenous treatment, gave him that little lift for a couple of days that we could bring him back to the nursing home.
So it's pain. If the nursing home said, well, we want to put your mother on a ventilation machine.
No, I know what those, what they're about. No, she wouldn't be able for that, Joe. And as well as that, anyone with Alzheimer's will tell you that has a family member that has Alzheimer's or a friend and they're used to going in and out to them. You know, surroundings is so important to them and familiarity. So we want this situation, like everybody else, to get better, that we can go back into them, you know, and see them and hold them. And so for that reason, no, I wouldn't like my mother transferred over to a hospital, you know, and I speak for the family as well, you know.
Okay, and the family feel it's the right thing to do is to leave her in the nursing home. Hopefully, yes. Hopefully she won't. She
well,
won't contract
God,
it.
We pray every day, Joe, that she won't.
Yeah, and if she does, well, then you want it dealt with in the nursing home.
Exactly,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
But we're just pleading for the extra staff because we know they're under immense pressure, like most nursing homes. And, like, you know, some of them were out for the 2 weeks isolation because they had symptoms and they're coming back. But some of them, I'd say, are just run off their feet and exhausted at this stage. So we don't want them to get sick because
true.
Of the lack of care, that they need there as well, staff to support them. And if I could just say, Joe, I'm pleading with people that are thinking of going on a holiday. Is it worth it?
Yeah.
Imagine if it's your neighbour next door. Maybe your neighbour is a doctor or a nurse or a carer, or maybe their spouse is ill. You know, and if there's nobody to look after them, that could be your family member down the road. So please think about it twice. We can all do the holidays again. So we can. Please don't go on that trip.
Okay.
Think of other people.
Okay.
You know, this, as my father loved horse racing, Joe.
Oh, cool.
And I think he'd be saying at the moment, like, this is like a grand national for all of us.
Yeah.
Loads of hurdles, so there is to get over.
Yeah.
And the finish line is a long way off. So we all have to sit up there and stay on the saddle and do as we're asked.
Full attention. Don't be reckless. Full attention, and we'll get to the finish line.
Yeah, please God, we will, Joe.
Okay.
Every one of us, and we'll all get in to see our parents again
and include your mother in that. What was your father's name, Colette?
James Adrian Byrne was his name, and he was from Lucan, a Lucan man. And we were blessed, Joe. We gave him a great send off. His funeral was just before the lockdown.
Ah, yeah.
Great Dub support. We even had Sam McGuire.
Oh my God.
You know, he was a great man, and you know, he didn't enjoy the best of health, but.
Okay, God rest him, and best wishes to your mother and the rest of the family, Colette. It's a very difficult time, and you've made a very difficult decision. Thanks, Colette.
Thank you, Joe, and you take care.
Yeah, and we say that to everybody. Thanks, Colette, and thanks for saying it to me. 51551, wash your hands. Let me bring in Anne Carr. Anne, good afternoon.
How you doing, Joe?
You want to get back to work ASAP. You're a frontline health worker.
I do. I am, Joe, and because of a possible contact,
mm-hmm.
I had to speak to my GP and have a test done. Now, I had the test done a week ago, and I'm still waiting on the result, which is very frustrating because I now have to collect a COVID payment, which I don't want to be collecting. I just want to be back in work, and I just have to sit it out now, and I have no idea when the result will come through.
Well, I heard Deirdre Bourke on with Sean this morning. She's head of the lab in UCD, and I must say she was very impressive. And she said they're prioritising health workers and people in ICU.
Yeah.
That there is a problem, and it's a worldwide problem with getting this reagent chemical for the test kits. But they're working. Be assured that they're working non-stop, all day. Really, really competent team. Really competent people. She came across as. Caring,
absolutely.
But anyway, I hope. But I hope you get the news, and I hope it's good news very, very soon.
Oh, absolutely. I'm feeling very well.
Oh, that's good. What was it like when you were in work before you had to isolate?
It was very busy.
Yeah.
Very, very busy, but manageable.
Yeah, and then I see the stories emerging. Well, this was on Sean as well that. Consultants have been sent to Cavan General Hospital after 70 medics were infected
with
coronavirus and other people suspected as well. Are you worried about going back to work? I know you want to go back to work, which
I'm not.
Brilliant. You're
I'm
a hero.
Not. I'm
You're not
worried.
Okay.
I'm not worried. Because I have already lost both my parents, and I live alone.
Yeah.
So I can go to work and come back home without any fear of
infection,
possibly passing it, someone else, which is, other people are in that situation where they're going back home to families, and it's very difficult.
How long have you been working in healthcare, Anne?
Oh, I have been working for about nearly 20 years.
Oh, well done. Well done, you.
Yeah.
And long may you continue. I hope you get news ASAP, Anne.
Yes.
Thanks, Joe. That's
Anne. Okay,
Anne Carr is in the Midlands, C-O-R-R. 51551, wash your hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Margaret, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. Hi, how are you?
Okay, what happened? The jogger?
When I hear the other stories, I realise how relatively insignificant my story is.
Okay, no, we cover all angles, don't we? Note your opening remark is very thoughtful of you to remember those people we've been talking about before the break.
Absolutely,
So tell us what happened, Margaret.
Just briefly, I go for a regular walk around my area. I live in a large urban area in the Leinster area.
Okay.
And I was going, part of it is a ring road, and I was going on my little walk, as I routinely do.
Right.
There was a man coming towards me, relatively youngish man, a jogger. As he came towards me, I did notice he flicked his nose, as joggers sometimes do. He was obviously running, and he did a few flicks. Now, I have to say, not towards me at all.
No.
Just on the ground or into the ditch. That was okay. It was kind of an unconscious, involuntary action. But as he came towards me, and we had a very wide footpath, a lot of those ring roads have a double-width footpath. So I kind of twiddled to see, was I going to go in or out? So he wasn't changing, so I went in on the inner part. But as he came towards me, he made no effort to go out on the outer part. And I was as in, I couldn't go in anymore. So as it came right near me, I said, and I just made a very subtle gesture with my hand to keep out. I said nothing, just a very subtle gesture, kind of move out, please. So he didn't, and he went past me, and I said, just said to myself, and he uttered an expletive. If he just said, oh, you effing bee, or whatever one says, if he was frustrated at my gesture. So I just looked behind him and I said, oh, let him off. He's having a bad day he dislikes my gesture, which I can appreciate. But I also felt maybe I was a little bit compromised.
Mm-hmm.
That was okay. I proceeded on my walk. And about 8 minutes later, on my walk, remember he had gone the opposite way and the road was quiet. Next thing I realized, there was a person beside me jogging on the spot.
Yeah.
And it was him.
Oh, my God.
He had returned from his own direction, backtracked, followed me, and came right up beside me. When I saw him, I got really quite discommoded. And he said to me, what was your problem up there, gesturing up towards the roundabout? And I didn't say anything. And he asked me again, jogging on the spot, what was your problem? And I was quite dumbfounded at this stage. Mm-hmm. So I said, very quietly, I said, I think you should know that, because I really didn't want to interact with him at all. And he said, you tell me what the problem is, quite aggressively. And I said in a very low voice, and I said, well, actually, there were two things. Number one, you did, do with your nose when it's running, when you're jogging. And I said, to be fair to you, you probably did that unconsciously, but I'm just pointing it out. And secondly, I said, as you came near me, I went in as far as I could. You made no effort to stay out. And he said to me, I can do anything I like with my nose. Mm. And the second thing he said to me, why didn't you cross the road? And I said, I couldn't, because we were on a roundabout.
Yeah.
And I couldn't. We were on a roundabout.
But he's a fellow who also told you to F off.
Absolutely. Yes, I know.
Did he address that issue of telling a complete stranger who was just observing what we're all told to observe in this awful crisis, that he ended up telling you to F off, and then he turned around and came back and confronted you? What was all that about?
Of course, but to be honest, Joe, I was quite shocked that he came back, and he was quite a tall gentleman. He was right beside me. I felt very discommoded.
Okay.
I didn't want to engage with him at all.
Yeah.
But he was jogging on the spot, you know.
Sounds like you were very calm, Margaret. What happened next? Did he leave or?
He kept kind of on the spot beside me, and I walked saying nothing. As it happened, we were very near our local Garda station.
Mm-hmm.
So I just turned to him very quietly and I said, I'll tell you what, would you like if you and I went in here and we'll give both our parts of the story?
Yeah, well, do I,
and he muttered, something else to me, some other expletive, and he jogged off.
Oh, for God's sake.
Mm.
So what did you do?
I was quite rattled.
Yeah.
I was heading home. I was quite near my house. And by some twist of thing, I said, maybe I'm going to go in and just say this to the guard.
Yeah, yeah.
So I did, and I went in very apologetically because I know they have bigger issues than mine. But I just felt maybe a little bit of a civic duty to, you know, highlight this, that, you know, I said to him, you're a busy guy. I just want to say this to you, that it's one thing if you felt maybe compromised by my gesture, but much more importantly was it's not acceptable to turn back and interrogate somebody who's out for a walk. I think that was my bigger issue, and that is probably the issue that I'm flagging. You know, we're all under pressure. Everybody's, you know, stressed. I did allow for this guy probably having a bad hair day, but we all have to have filters. You can't interrogate somebody as well, you know. And I think I'm out of my comfort zone making the call.
Yeah, I know. Won't you sound such a lovely person, and even the way you handle it, and even the tone that you told us you spoke in could not have aggravated anybody, but you were right on what you did. What did the Gardaí say? I don't think you wanted the Gardaí to pursue him or anything from your tone there. But what did they say?
He listened to me, and it was a very short conversation. I said, I know there isn't much. He said, do you want to give me any details? I said, listen, he was wearing runner's shorts and a hat, and there's very little. There's nothing you can do. But I said, maybe in terms of public awareness that, you know, and particularly joggers, and I know there are little stories out there.
Yeah.
Look, I'm all for jogging, but they can emit sweat droplets. They can have a runny nose. Just to be a little bit more cognizant, you know.
Okay.
And I felt I had done everything possible, but, I'm not sure.
Okay, I know we have a jogger who came in, and not related to your story, because I don't think anyone could defend that. Greg O'Bourne. Greg, good afternoon.
Afternoon, T. Joe. How are you doing?
Good. Are Greg's getting a... Are joggers getting a bad rap?
When I heard that story, I was hoping, oh my God, I hope I don't hear from Joe, because that's totally undefensible. That's unbelievable behaviour. In any circumstances, I tell you, do a fair bit of running around, well, road runner, so you head off and you go for miles in any direction and you come across some characters. Before this, people who would have a pop at you just for running. But now, I'm even beginning to feel a bit nervous going out, because you're hearing stories, people are not liking to see people running. It's unfair to be having a go at runners in general. I think he's just an oddball.
And what have you noticed, Greg, when you're out running?
Well, I've noticed people not wanting you to be there.
Yeah.
And in the running club, I put up a notice, don't go outside your 2K limit. The last thing people want is people from other areas coming into their area and things like that, because that's, you know, you don't want it yourself. But you feel very, very self-conscious. And now I know when I see people coming in the distance, I'm out in the road.
Yeah,
and you can go out in the road now because there's no cars, and you give people a wide berth. And I do like to say hello as well. People stop saying hello, even in the shops.
Some.
You know, because you know, you can see your demeanour, that you're well intentioned, and especially appreciate if you give them a very wide berth. But the most people are still very nervy out there. And I tell anyone who's running, good Lord, respect people's space. But that guy, he's not a runner. He's just a nut.
Okay.
So I have no hesitation about saying that. And you did the right thing to go in and tell the guards about it, because I'd imagine he's going to be going around the area again. And last thing you need to be coming up against someone like that in the dark. But
as you can hear, she's very, Margaret is very rattled. Very rattled.
I'm rattled myself. Listen to a story like that.
Greg, is running good for your mental health?
Running is great for physical, mental health, the whole kit and caboodle.
Okay.
It really is.
And what time do you go out running?
Well, before all this started, I was a midday man at lunchtime and go out and do 5 or 6 miles. Now I'd go out about 9 o'clock at night.
Oh, would you?
And just go around, do 3 or 4 miles, just literally a loop around the block.
Okay.
You know, do a slow, do a fast, speed up. At least then, if you're in your area, people tend to know you. And there's the crazy running guy that lives around the corner. Then, you know, you're not somewhere strange where people say strange are running through. That's a shocking story. That's good Lord. But don't be having a go with the poor runners. By and large, we're all well behaved.
Honest, you're not. We know you're not, Margaret. Let me bring in.
You did the right thing. My God, that's a terrible thing to happen to anyone, Margaret. That really is.
Trina, stay there. 5-1-5-1 Wash your hands, Trina.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Jogging.
Yes.
Yes or no?
Yeah, no, in short, no. And it's nothing against joggers at all. I understand they need to get out and get fresh air and exercise, as we all do.
Yeah.
But I feel that in this particular scenario, it's so highly dangerous. As a nation, we're investing so much to try and limit the spread of the virus. I mean, poor Simon Harris, I think they're doing a fantastic job, the government. Mm-hmm. I really do. They're under immense pressure. But they bring it back to the simplicity of three tools, very simple tools that are within all our gift. One is hand washing.
Yeah.
We all know that. Distancing and cough etiquette. And the reason for the cough etiquette, apart from obvious etiquette, is that it can emit droplets. It can be emission of droplets. And that is what transmits the virus. That's simple. And jogging, unfortunately, doesn't allow, it doesn't facilitate pedestrians and joggers in a reasonably narrow space.
But apart,
typically public footpath.
Okay, apart from speed, what's the difference between jogging and walking?
Okay, there's two things. They're running and they're coming at quite a high speed.
Okay.
Usually.
Yeah.
And some are compliant in that they make an effort to go out, which means going out on the public road.
Mm-hmm.
So either the jogger has to go out or you have to go out as a pedestrian. And that's not safe, obviously. We shouldn't have to go out on the public road. Also, my understanding is that a footpath is for pedestrians. But we could turn a blind eye to that if everybody can be safe on it. That's the main thing. But out of the three very, very simple things we're asked to do, three of them can't be effectively maintained. A jogger will come. Now, I see them, and I don't mean to be disrespectful to them. Some of them have snorted in my face. Not consciously. They don't even see me. It's a tendency. It's the nature of jogging. We'd all be the same jogging, where they tend to get lost in their own world. Maybe they're listening to their earphones, and they're not noticing what's going on. And I've pulled a few up on it, and they've said to me, "Look, sorry."
When you say snorting, do you mean relieving nasal congestion using a finger?
Yes. Okay. No, a blowout from the nose.
Yeah, sorry, that's what I mean.
Heavy breathing coming out.
Okay.
Yeah, heavy breathing coming out. Now, one jogger's breath on my face. And also, they're coming up from behind, so you don't know that they're coming, and they're coming quite close to you. And it's risky. Why are we allowing this hugely risky activity? Look at the amount of guards we've out on the road this weekend.
Incredible.
Massive resources, and people. So many people.
And
are
Trina,
dying,
have you come across joggers?
All the time, they're on the road. I live on the Marion Road.
Have you spoken to any of them?
Oh, absolutely, indeed I have. Yeah. Now, in fairness to them, anybody I have met, they've been very pleasant. I've never apologised, but I just wasn't thinking. And this is the whole problem, people are not
thinking.
And
what do you say to them?
I usually ask them, have you ever heard of distancing? I said, you haven't observed distancing.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you've blown into my face. And I'm very strict in observing, the rules that have been laid out by the government. But
how did you stop them when they were running?
Well, for example,
just
for example,
rugby tackled him or whatever, no, Trina. I don't mean to make light of it. Sorry.
Not at all. No. I was on Sandymans. Usually, I live on the Merrion Road, so I have a 5-minute walk to Sandymans Strand. But my walk to Sandymans Strand is a bit nerve wracking because it's very heavily populated with joggers. And but I was on the Strand the other day, and a guy cut sideways in front of me.
Right.
And he ran ahead of me. Mm-hmm. He had earphones in him, and I was tempted to call him. Because I don't want to do this to everybody because it would wear me out. But every now and again, I think it's good to make the point. And I recognised him coming back down, and he was walking at this stage, and I spoke to him then.
Okay.
Very nice guy. He apologised.
Do you think jogging should, as has happened, I think, in Paris, from 7 in the morning till 9 at night, jogging has been banned?
I was coming to that point. But I think to be fair to everybody, I we all have to make sacrifices. I like to swim, but I can't swim at the moment. And I'm very, very grateful for the fact that I'm allowed to go out within 2 km and have a little walk. Mm. I think that considering that people over 70 can't go out at all, I think we're privileged to be allowed that freedom. Now, the minister has said exercising, but I think that's too broad. I mean, does that mean doing yoga on the footpath? What does it mean? I think it needs to be better qualified. And I think that, in fairness to everybody, if he said joggers maybe from 8 to 9 in the morning and 7 to 8 in the evening, I think that gives everybody a chance. If you want to put your life at risk and going to walk down a road while they're likely to be there, okay, that's your responsibility. Mm. It's not what we're asked to do. It's not in line with government policy. But okay. I think that would give a space to everybody.
Greg, how would you react if there was a curfew, so to speak, on joggers?
Well, you'd have to comply, Joe.
Yeah.
In honesty, you do what you're told to do. Now, I have to behave. I can't believe that people would go up and snort at someone's face or come even close.
No, he was snorting, and I happened to be beside him.
Yeah, no, I understand. I understand what you mean. I do understand what you mean. But like, I've been running a long, long time, and before the craze, if you like, started, and you can see it at races that there'd be new people coming in, and they wouldn't know runners' etiquette, probably like myself when I started, and they'd be annoying. But I'd imagine there's a lot more people out now going out and just taking up the hobby who just don't know how to behave, because that's just indefensible. As I say, I'd give the people and anyone I know who runs. I don't run together anymore. Find a lonely place. Don't be going in where people are.
Okay.
I think without an effective rule there, and you have a certain amount of ad lib with a lot of people, it's just human nature. It is difficult to keep it regulated.
Apparently that action that you're talking about, that people have been talking about with the nose and emptying your nose as you're running or whatever, is called the dustman's whistle or the dustman's blow. I didn't know that.
Well, whatever, I call it snorting, but am I after picking up Corona is all I'm interested in that particular moment.
Okay.
And I feel it's unfair. You know, I feel it can be resolved. I feel by, you know, if the minister has said it's all right to go for a run, I think if you restricted the hours, it would be fair to everybody.
Anne O'Sullivan, your quick point. Thanks, Trina. Your quick point, please, Anne.
Yeah, so I agree with everything that's said there, and
Trina,
I also respect what Greg is saying. But when I was out walking, a man, and that's why I'm ringing, he did that, whatever, dust blow, but then 2 small children were on bicycles cycled through the mist of whatever he was.
God.
It really, really does need to be just organised in some way or some sort of awareness campaign, because everybody loves their exercise and we understand that. But I think they just need to be more aware.
It's a way of quickly blowing your nose without stopping and introducing a tissue or whatever. But anyway,
I walk quite quickly, and I don't think I'd be allowed to do that.
Yeah, no, of course you wouldn't. No.
You know.
Okay,
not at the moment.
Okay.
Not at the moment.
Okay. Fiona, your point, please. Thanks, Greg.
Hi there. Okay, yeah. I'll be very quick, Joe.
Yeah, okay.
I sent in your researchers a sign that was erected on the outside of a very popular holiday area in West Cork.
Big sign
at the start of the town was, if you don't live here, you shouldn't be here.
Okay.
Now, I'd like to preface this by saying that I would be very compliant with all the regulations. I understand the 2K rule. We have a house down there. There's absolutely no way we travel. And to give some context, and why I'm ringing really, is a family has been there for 50-odd, 60 years. We have the holiday house. And my family, my young family, have moved down there.
Okay.
And they moved there before any of these restrictions
okay.
took place. Okay. So the young lad, one of the young lads in question, was out walking the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And two people came up to him and basically said, what are you doing here? And he said, just walking the dog. And he said, well, we've noticed you're loitering. What are you and your like? A few abusive sort of words, called him various names, and threatened to shoot the dog the next time they saw him out walking.
And were they referring to the fact that he wasn't from originally from the area?
He wasn't from the area. Now,
oh,
this particular town, Joe, is renowned for its wonderful film festivals. It depends on tourists. It has a wonderful amount of tourist shops.
Mm-hmm.
It would also have, you know, beautiful restaurants, etc., etc. And they would have film festivals, you name it, the regatta would be going on. Before he knew that the sign had been put up, he was actually in a shop. And the person, he chatted to the person and he said, you know, are you finding it busy in here? How are things? And he said, yeah, it's busy because of the likes of you. And he said, sorry, what? He said, did you not see the sign coming into the town? You're not welcome here.
Yeah.
Now, they've moved down there.
Yeah.
And I understand what fear does to people. I understand a small community does not want this horrible virus affecting their town in any way, shape or form. But Joe, these are people acting as vigilantes. Let the police do their job.
Yeah,
let
okay.
the police monitor the situation and let them dictate who enters the town and who doesn't enter the town. And if people are living there and they happen to be from Dublin, let them live. Do not threaten them. Do not abuse them. That town needs the likes of us going down and keeping the economy going, and Tourism Ireland needs the economy going. And this particular town is renowned for their Germans and their English people that are living there and supporting the town. So I don't think any sign should be erected, and I think it's disgraceful, and I think threatening people is also wrong.
Okay.
That's my point.
Well, it's a point well made. Fiona, how are you managing generally in the emergency?
Absolutely fine.
Okay.
I retired a while ago, so we have our routine. We do our walking within our 2K radius. We have a lovely dog. We keep that up, do my reading. My sister lives next door, so we're keeping within that sort of little unit, and just trying to keep positive, keeping in touch with people on phoning and Skyping and Zooming and all that sort of thing. Thank God for technology. And first world problems, no holidays, no visiting beautiful West Cork until the time is right.
Okay.
But I want to be welcome down there when I do go back down there.
Okay, well put, Fiona. Thanks indeed, and stay safe. 51551,
okay,
wash your hands.
Thank you.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Walter Lacely. Walter, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
It's a photograph that's gone everywhere at this stage, and all. I think every national newspaper bar one this morning. Probably the most poignant use of the photograph is on the front of the Irish Daily Mirror. It's a man, he was on talking to us yesterday and he sent us the photograph. He's standing on a garden bench which he dragged over to a high window, and he's gazing in through the window, and the beautiful spring sky and trees are reflected in the glass. But what he's looking in at is his brother, who had just passed because of COVID-19, and the headline in the Mirror says "The Parting Glass," and his brother was Fran Bourne, much loved worker. What happened in your case? It was your dad.
It was the photograph that resonated with me.
Yeah,
so we experienced something similar, but not. Our dad passed away on the 2nd of April, just last week, in the nursing home here in Carlow. It wasn't COVID related, but the funeral arrangements and everything afterwards was COVID-related in that sense, where we had to have all our restrictions
But prior to his departure, we did go up to the nursing home and we stared in at him through the window. At the time, he wasn't very responsive, so we were just looking in at him lying there in the bed. And it just resonated with me then when I saw the other photograph. But then I just wanted to share our experience then in relation to the restrictions for the funeral of Dad. And only 13 months ago, my mum passed away and I was doing a eulogy in front of a packed church.
Yeah.
And I found myself last Saturday doing a eulogy in front of 12 people, 6 siblings and our partners.
Right.
And in the middle of it, just resonated with me. This actually is very dignified in a way and very special that we were able to share this with our dad. Obviously, we would love the church to have been filled as he would, but knowing the circumstances, it just came across that it was a very dignified, very special service and ceremony.
And Walter, was there a webcam in the church? I participated at a funeral yesterday of an uncle through watching it on the webcam in the church. Was there a webcam in the church where your father's obsequies were?
There was in St. Clair's Church in Great Holland.
Good.
And I was very conscious of, and I mean it, hundreds of people were watching in. He was well known, well respected, well liked, but also had relations in America, a granddaughter in Abu Dhabi, and many relations.
Okay,
England,
so they could. I presume all churches have webcams now, have they?
They're relatively
straightforward, aren't they?
They're straightforward, and they're on 24/7, even though there's nothing going on there. But if you tune in any time, you would just see the altar.
Yeah, well, that's
from the webcam.
Well, at the moment, a lot of people get great sucker from that. They really do.
Absolutely, and the reaction we received afterwards, Joe, was amazing.
And I know Mass is on every morning on RT News now. Now, unfortunately, the likes of my mother doesn't have internet access or acquaintance. But as I say, I'm presuming all churches have webcams. Maybe I'm wrong. Or maybe just because it would be sadder, everything is sad, but it would be sadder in the current circumstances if someone was to die and be buried under the COVID-19 restrictions and the service was from that protocol. If they weren't, other people weren't able to participate in the service remotely, but anyway.
It would be horrific because his 22 grandchildren were unable to attend the removal and they were also watching in on the webcam, and it was very, very difficult for them. And one of my sisters, Brenda, who was isolating, didn't get to see Dad before he passed away and when he passed. And I did send a couple of photographs, Joe, where 6 of us, as we got closer to the cemetery, we got out and walked in with social distancing and behind the hearse. You know,
really important. Really important.
All the grandchildren had formed a guard of honour within their own little family unit, so they didn't mix either, so it was all the social distancing. But I just felt...
Tell us a little bit about your dad for a second, Walter. A lot of people know you, don't you? You're the independent counsellor.
I retired last May, Joe, but yes, I was. And he was one of my main campaigners during the 30-year period.
Fair play.
But,
his name was Luke Lacey.
Luke Lacey, 87 years of age, and he had 85... wonderful, healthy years.
Mm-hmm.
He retired as a young man, Joe, at 55 because he did have what he thought might have been heart problems, but it turned out just to be stress or strain, or as we call it now, burnt out. So he spent 32 years looking after us, his 7 children, and indeed his 22 grandchildren and 1 great-grandchild. So a remarkable man. He spent a lot of his time in the church, Joe, playing music. He sang with the men's choir, and then he wrote a number of hymns, and actually one of the hymns he wrote was sung by the Poor Clare sisters who were in St. Clair's Church in Grey Cullen. And when I asked them would they sing the offertory, they said they'd be delighted.
And they sang one of his own hymns?
Yes, they sang a song that he had penned for
them.
Isn't
that fantastic?
And I wasn't aware of that, but I was aware he'd wrote songs, but I wasn't aware of that. He was also a great O'Hanrahan's, or the Blues, football man here in County Carlow.
Okay.
And, of course, very proud of the Carlow roots.
Of course.
But Joe, there's one, if I may. So he wrote a number of hymns and songs down through the years, but one he wrote, I'm sure, 25 years ago, it's called We Seek Peace. Can I just read the first verse?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Because it could be...
But you could, yeah,
you could say it was... I won't sing it, Joe, thank you.
Okay, I wasn't expecting, yeah.
No, seriously, though, it could have been written in the last 3 weeks, but he actually wrote this maybe 20, 25 years ago. So it just goes, the first verse is, throughout many years, the world is filled with tears, days full of trouble, sadness in our midst, death clouds the air with suffering everywhere, lost in a tragic world, in deep despair. And I think that
Did he put a name on that hymn?
Yeah, We Seek Peace.
Yeah, well, you must send it into us and we'll put it up on our social media sites. Well, God rest Lou Clancy. And Walter
Luke Lacey.
Yeah. God rest Luke Lacey and Walter Lacey, who was well known around Carlow, and your dad was as well. Thanks for those comments. That's remember. You mind yourself.
Your mum only 13 months ago, and he pined for the last 13 months. You know, so they were very united, married for 62 years.
Yeah. You mentioned the whole dignity of funerals at the moment, Walter.
Yeah.
Talking about your dad, Luke Lacey. But Barbara Galvin. Barbara, good afternoon. You're a funeral singer.
I am indeed, Joe. How are you?
Good. And
condolences to that gentleman there and all the people calling in, because I see daily how hard this is for families. And I've done a number of funerals now. I've done funerals where there's been 500 people, and now we're down to, like this morning I did a funeral with 5 people. And it's just so, so hard for them. But I'm finding, I got a lovely message from a family last night who couldn't get to see their father or anything, but they had music yesterday. And they were saying, without that music today, we wouldn't have even accepted that he passed. And it's just giving, you just feel, they've been so dignified. Out of all the funerals I've done over all the years I've been singing, honestly, in the last 2 weeks, I think they've been the most beautiful funerals I've ever done. Yeah. I know it sounds strange,
no.
But even for myself, you just see it because it's just, you know, it's just the people that were the closest, the ones that really, truly meant something to that person that they loved the most. And it's just so dignified and peaceful and prayerful. It's been an honour to do them, you know. And like I was saying there to your researcher, I had to sing at a graveside last week for a COVID case, and I was in Kilturin, and just, you know, surrounded by the hills and all that, and just singing, and just to give something, to feel like you're giving something to the families, that all of that loss, we can still give a lovely send-off, we can still, and the funeral directors all doing their utmost to give the best that they can. We can't give as much as we normally do, but from the music point of view, I really feel, you know,
and
that
what are you singing at funerals at the moment, insofar as there is a
Well, I mean, you're still, it's funny because each parish seems to still have their own rule, if you like. I know I was saying there to researchers, there isn't webcams in all the churches. Loads of churches
I didn't know that.
There's loads of older churches that wouldn't really. So they don't all have me, so you wouldn't have that chance. But from a music point of view, it's still a full mass. Now, it's going to be changed now the next couple of days because of Good Friday and Easter Saturday, you're only going to have a service. So people who actually do manage to get a funeral, because normally there'd be nothing on Good Friday or Easter Saturday, so they'd have a very short service. But otherwise, you're still singing.
And what did you sing at the funeral this morning?
This morning, what did I sing? I had to sing, I'm trying to think now, sorry, you got me now. I sang Abide With Me. I sang Piaezu.
Piaezu
is beautiful, you know. But then you'll always have a request, like I know tomorrow somebody wants Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and last week at the graveside I was singing Sweet 16.
Oh yeah,
you know, so it's always nice at the end. They generally do allow at the end of a funeral mass you'd have whatever, you know. It doesn't necessarily have to be a religious hymn, but it's just lovely. I have to say, the message I'm getting over the last week or two from families
it's
positive. But and I'm sure a lot of these families, what they will do is they'll probably have a memorial service in months to come.
Yeah.
Or I don't know if there's going to be a national day, Joe. Someone said to me last week on Facebook,
I think
will they do something?
Yes, we have to have, you've said it, and I'm going to, insofar as this program can do anything, we need a national day of mourning out of this.
You really,
it's not
do.
It's not over yet. We need a national day of mourning where people will all come together and either in small groups or whatever, hopefully to remember those who died, be it through a service for their relatives or indeed as a community remembering people that they might never have known. But I think
November masses for remembrance, and each parish would have their own. But I just think a national day of remembrance for all of us when the time comes, that everybody can just unite, because we've been so united so far in every way.
I think that's a fantastic idea.
In
one sense, it changes nothing, unfortunately, but in the other sense, it does. We'd all have a day of, don't we have a National Remembrance Day in?
Yeah, we do.
It's the nearest Sunday, actually. It's for people who died in the First World War and the Second World War, and I think it's the nearest Sunday to the 11th of July. It's a Sunday. It normally happens.
Oh, that's it.
It happens up in the Royal Hospital, Kilmainham.
That's
the
where
president,
they do it. Yeah, that's Taoiseach, it.
Brilliant.
And also in November, you'll always have November We Remember as well. So that'll always be for the people who died in the past year and that as well. But I have to say, just from, because I was saying, I put something on Facebook last week. I know you've spoken about funeral undertakers and that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's only when I saw the guys and you see it up close and personal, and I know everybody on the front line, if you mentioned them, which they should be, and it's fantastic. But you see these undertakers on the front line as well, going in, and they're going into the nursing homes as well, remember. They're going in where this is rampant and, you know, and doing all they can for families, still having repose in funeral homes, still trying to, you know, and unfortunately having to do COVID cases over the phone. But still, the guys are still getting up close and personal to families and doing, like, really all they can to give them as much as you can, because it's just, as I heard Dr. Harry Barry the other night on Primetime saying, there'll be so much mourning to come in the months ahead, Joe, you know, when people only kind of go, when you didn't get to grieve. Like my mother would say to me, she didn't get to see her own mother. It was way back years and years ago, but she was pregnant and the family thought it'd be good for her not to see her mother. But to this day, my mother remembers that, saying, why didn't they let me see? And so many families now won't have got to see their loved ones because they can't have open casket. And it's all those things that give closure to people when they're mourning. But sorry, I'm rambling.
The National Day of Remembrance is in July.
It's in July, is it? Yeah.
So, and it's the nearest Sunday to the 11th of July. Now, the nearest Sunday this year to the 11th of July is the following day, the 12th of July. But all the marches up north and indeed in Donegal and Monaghan, they've been cancelled for the 12th of July. People need hope and they need to be able to focus on a date, and
need to have folks and kind of know that we're going to, you know, honour all these people and honouring everybody that has done, and it's fantastic what you're doing there, and people being able to call in and just, you know, not only vent but just to talk and feel there's someone there to talk to, you know, because I see the families, Joe, as well, sorry before you go, you know, each day what's happening is, because there's no mourning cars or anything now, so it's happening for families now. Normally you'd have a funeral car go to your house and they'll pick you up, we'd say, at 9:10. And your family may be in the house and they'll all be there and there'll be prayers at the coffin and they'll close. And you all leave with the family and go to church. Now what's happening is families are just leaving in the morning, hopping into their own car and going up to the church. And then it's finished outside the church. And, you know, as Ireland do great funerals, and the wake is all part of the morning, you know, and the drinks afterwards and whatever afterwards. And now people are just getting back into the car and just going back to their house.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just... No, I can't even imagine what it's like for them, you know. So all that we can do, all you know, whether it's to give the best funeral we can, you know, to, you know, put our heart and soul into it and at least have that 40 minutes to go, let's just try and give them everything here that, you know, when they're missing so much more.
Okay, well said, Barbara. And your call for a National Day of Remembrance, I hope will be heard.
Yes, I really hope so.
Let me bring Marion Lanigan in. Marion, you've another idea. I mentioned I thought most churches had webcams. Barbara said not all of them do. You say you get mass over the phone.
That's right, Joe. Our local church, my children go to St. Faith's School in Beaumont, and the church there, Church of the Nativity in Beaumont, offer a telephone service so people can join the service over the phone.
Yeah.
I heard you mention that your mother doesn't have internet connection. So I've actually dialed into this myself and I've passed the details on to some of my relatives, my mother-in-law in particular.
And anyone can dial in?
Well, I'm assuming they can. It's a Dublin number, Joe. So 10 o'clock every morning.
And what, you dial in?
You dial in and it answers, it's an automatic answer phone and it asks you to dial 6. to listen into the Mass, and you can hear the priest very clearly, and you can hear some of the other congregation answering
their prayer. That's on every morning. The phone number is that it? Is that the phone number? 84?
That is the phone number.
Long phone number. 84777-40.
That's
and
it.
You select option six, and you're at 10 o'clock every morning. Okay, well mentioned, Marion. I was completely unaware of that. And people do get great succour. All people of all different religions get great succour at the minute from service. Okay, Marion Lanigan, thanks indeed. And Barbara Galvin before that. 51551, watch out.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Okay, calling all animal lovers everywhere, even those who don't give a barney about animals. Let me bring in Clive Alcorn. Clive, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How's it going?
You run a zoo.
I run a zoo in Donegal called Tropical World.
There's a zoo in Donegal?
There's a zoo in Donegal.
And what do you have in the zoo in Donegal?
We have Furicult. It was established 10 years ago and we've been open from April 2011.
Mm-hmm.
We've everything from tropical butterflies in pre-flight to we've four different species of lemurs, monkeys, parrots. We've all sorts of reptiles, all sorts of bugs. So quite an interesting collection.
So many different species of animal stroke do you have?
We have about 65 different enclosures.
Wow.
It's quite unique within Ireland.
And have any, because everyone is obsessed with this Tiger King, Joe Exotic, this...
Yeah,
no, it's not,
yeah.
He'd give private zoos a bad name, wouldn't he? But
yeah.
How many private zoos in Ireland do you know, Clive?
There's probably about 12 to 15 which are all part of the EASA, who is a government body of zoos within Ireland and England, as well as what I call the larger, the likes of Dublin and Fodo and Tato would be the three big names.
Of course,
and then from that... Then, as I say, there's smaller private family-run, you know, good zoos that are doing, as I say, doing the right thing. Like,
okay, so
you know,
what's so you're closed? Do you get any public funding?
No, we don't.
Okay, so you're closed. So how do you feed the animals? Well, the animals you have to feed.
My wages.
That is.
That's it. My wages is going to feed the animals, and we will. Like, we also the family business is a garden centre and a florist. We've been established for over 40 years, so.
Well, how much does it cost to feed the animals each week?
At the moment, my feed bill is about 450 quid a week.
Wow.
You know, and that's
now, there's no emergency funding for private zoos, is there?
No. Well, this is the thing that... it's just trying to get the word out there that there's so many good causes out there, but even that the public can go and support their local, even buy vouchers, family tickets going forward... into 2021.
Okay, good idea. Yeah, good idea.
That will actually support it brings revenue into the zoos today, which, as I say, supports because we are probably privileged in the sense that because we have two other businesses, we can basically everything is amalgamated so we can it helps keep the thing going. But a small business that basically is totally dependent on a visitor attraction where the public's coming through that door. Well, if they have no income, and my fear is that with this COVID-19 now developing, that it has been basically recorded in lions and tigers in the Bronx Zoo in New York.
No, I saw that, yeah. Well, they say the tiger got it from his keeper.
Yeah, well, this is it.
But how did they know the tiger? How did they know the tiger had COVID-19?
Well, that's the vet's job to work that one.
Oh, I'm told it's not just breaking news. It's not conclusive that he got it from humans. But anyway, that's his keeper thought he did. Okay.
Yeah. So it's a fear in my view, as I say, I very much doubt if we will actually open our doors until probably April 2021.
Oh, wow.
So it means that I have to maintain my zoo for basically 18 months with no revenue coming through the door, which is quite a task.
That's 70. That's 72 weeks at what 500 quid a week food.
Yeah, and that's plus heating bills on top of that, and veterinary bills, and
that's
anything else that goes
with
it. That's
€35,000 approx.
Yeah, but it will be done. It's not. You know, I mean, animals.
And what's your main? Obviously, butterflies. You don't have to feed them, or
butterflies. Well, butterflies is actually what I call tropical butterflies. We didn't even eat. They actually come in from the Philippines and Ecuador on a normal year. They would actually a butterfly life's only 2 to 3 weeks.
Oh, is it?
So they're actually being replaced, and what their butterflies would come And it's actually a form of sustainable farming, that where the butterflies are bred in the jungle and basically then shipped. And then these are come out.
And I see on your website, I'm told that you encourage people to start a butterfly garden.
Yeah, well, part of the, our whole ethos is basically conservation, education. Okay.
I'll refer people to your website. It's called Tropical World. That'd be a great idea if people started a butterfly garden. Is this a good time of year to start it?
This is ideal time.
Oh, great. Okay, butterfly gardens, you know. Please. Now, how did you end up owning a zoo, Clive?
Owning a zoo. Yeah. Well, from a child, the passion was always animals, and started off originally with pet rabbits as a young child. Then went on to pedigree rabbits. And pedigree rabbits was, what I used to show them.
What's the difference between a pet rabbit or an ordinary rabbit and a pedigree bunny?
There's quite a few different species of pedigree rabbits.
And how do you show, apart from the obvious, how do you show a rabbit at a competition?
Rabbits they would come, as I say, you go to a hall at that time. This would have been back in the mid-80s. They would have, you'd have had, say, they'd come to a cage, and then they'd be a judge then, and they'd all come out onto a table.
Yeah.
And then each the same as a dog, they would have a standard for the different, the likes of Netherland, Morris and Soldier Foxes and all.
Okay, but the rabbits not all start
rabbiting
each other.
No. This is
they're well behaved, aren't they?
This is where the well behaved and the work that people put on.
And did you win anything, Clive Alcorn?
I had the Irish champion for 3 years in a row back in the 80s.
And what was his or her name?
It was called Topsy. He was a Silver Fox rabbit, which was...
Oh, Topsy is well remembered. Is Topsy alive or dead?
Oh, Topsy's long dead.
Is he? Okay.
But Topsy was special.
We shouldn't be laughing. Anybody, people love their pets.
Well, this is anybody who has animals.
Yeah.
The main feature of, as I say, as the respect for animals...
Yeah,
it's great for children. It's great education.
Absolutely.
And as I say, what we're trying to do is promote conservation.
Okay, Tropical World. Go on to your website, Tropical World Letter Kenny.
Uh-huh.
And as you say, you've loads of different how to start a butterfly garden, but also you can find all about. Can you buy gift vouchers on your website?
Not at the moment. No.
But your details are there. People want to buy a gift voucher, and you'll honour the gift voucher. Come hell or high water.
Yeah. Okay. And as I say, I would encourage people.
Are you
to do it with their local zoos as well. There's a lot of smaller places
I didn't know that.
Around the country. It's not just...
Clive, are you watching Tiger King Exotic Joe?
No.
Everyone, me and you must be the only two people in the country not watching it.
Well, this is it. Well, I think my nephew watches it.
The film I'm watching is Jojo Rabbit. It's a fantastic movie. Okay, Clive, we'll put that out there for you. Thanks indeed. It's Clive Alcorn, Tropical World, Letterkenny. Today's show is produced by Fergus Sweeney, broadcast coordinator Lane Collin, Kieran Cullen on sound. Ray Darcy is next. Stay well, look after each other.